Hi, welcome to Indiana Weekend with John Strauss. This is a kind of radio magazine show about the interesting places and intriguing people in our part of the state. We're always interested in your thoughts. Drop us a note at indianaweekend@gmail.com with your suggestions and comments. Let us know what's going on where you are. Today, a part of our occasional series, Checking In, where we stop by to see what's new in communities around the listening area. Today, we're talking about Muncie, and specifically, the Downtown Farm Stand, with Dave Ring, who started the organic grocery store and deli 8.5 years ago with his wife, Sarah.
We were organic farmers. We'd been full-time growing organic produce north of Muncie up by Albany for about 7 years, and we and other organic producers that we knew were having trouble selling everything that we produced and doing all the run around, you know, crazy, doing all these different ways to try and market our products. And we said, boy, if there was just a way that there was a store that we could drop our products off at and know that they were going to get sold and then get back to the business of farming and not have to worry about the retail end of selling our products so much. And so that was the idea that sparked the creation of the store.
It has to be a challenge running a store. I mean, you have a niche, so you have something that's unique.
And we take really seriously the different roles that we play in the community. So for downtown, we are downtown's grocery store. And, you know, we look at having a broad, you know, selection of products that so that you can get all your essentials and everything that you need if you live in an apartment or a house near downtown. And we take our role seriously with helping develop a local sustainable food system, because we saw this store as that first step for not only the producer but the consumer in creating more supply and more demand for organic products that are grown locally. So yeah, we have a lot of challenges, and we enjoy meeting those every day.
I'm guessing that you have to experiment. You have to adjust your product mix, the things that you're offering. I think you started delivering recently.
We started delivering, it's actually been about 5 years now. We started a home delivery of the groceries, and that's a just enormously popular option based on convenience, where you don't pay anything for delivery. There's no delivery fee. And then a delivery box of produce that's fresh, that's in season, that's really good quality, shows up at your door. You can customize whatever you like online, add whatever grocery item you want to that box. And so the only thing people have to do is, you know, we bring the new box and they put out their old one the week before. They don't have to be there. So it's a really nice, convenient option that it's offered up a new customer base for us.
What's your sense about downtown? We have the new canal that recently opened. There's a lot of effort on the facade, reconstruction, fixing the sewers. Are you optimistic about the way things are going?
Business is growing, and you know, a lot of that's, you know, because people are still finding us after, you know, almost 9 years. We're still being discovered. And I'm optimistic about downtown. We love downtown. It's important to us from a lot of different standards to see the city center thrive and become an area of commerce again. We see the potential in Muncie for being, you know, a hub where based around food production, you know, and organic food production. We see that as an area of a lot of potential for this area that can bring in a lot of investment, but create a lot of jobs and just make the quality of life here a lot better. And so, yeah, we're optimistic. We just have to keep constantly stay on our toes and make sure that we're moving our business forward at all times.
Tell me what you mean about the Center for Food Production. There's probably a growing interest that people have in locally sourced food, right?
There's a growing interest in it, and we think, you know, that there has to be. We see that regional and local food production is going to become more and more important with climate change and all the challenges that we see, you know, in the futures with food and how it's produced, and people are a lot more in tune with how their food is produced. So we like to think that we're going to be here to help foster a local sustainable food system of the future that this area has to move into, as we think about, you know, all the different ways that food is produced now that aren't going to be sustainable in the future.
Do you get a sense that there are more people like you who are starting out in organic farming? I mean, you're not starting out, but other people who are joining you in organic farming?
Absolutely. There's a lot of interest in it. The challenge is like what you said, you know, it's a commodity area. This region of the state is filled with corn and soybeans. And so,
and those people, in essence, are bidding against you for the ground.
Yeah, right? The land prices are really high right now, higher than they've ever been. So we really look at that as being a challenge. But I do also think that's going to change. We're going to see some shifts in the market. There's a worldwide bucking of the GMO crops. So trade on that, on some of that issue is going to be disrupted, I think, and there'll be less demand for some of the commodity crops. And then I think you'll see land prices go down and make it more available for the starting farmer to be able to get in and do it.
Is there sort of a community downtown here? You have your regulars? You have more people coming to live downtown?
Yeah, our whole business is based around regulars. Some people have been coming in for 8 years, you know, so we have to have that repeat business. We have to have our service at a really high level and, you know, make sure that we're taking care of each person that walks in the door. But it's also something that we want to do. You know, everybody that works here takes a lot of pride in meeting the customer's needs and, you know, friendly neighborhood service, you know, that you just don't see anymore. I like the kids being able to come in here, my kids and other kids, being able to come in and see a community business that you just don't often see anymore. And so I like them to have that example to look at. And so when they get older, they can look back on this, like, much like the way we are able to look back on our experiences and our youth with neighborhood businesses.
Dave Ring, who runs the Downtown Farm Stand in Muncie with his wife Sarah. The organic grocery and deli grew out of their small organic farm. He's also a cook with a background at local restaurants. We stopped in at the Downtown Farm Stand as part of an occasional series we're doing on interesting places across the listening area.
Indiana Weekend, Real Radio from just down the road. Look for that name on Facebook and drop us a line. Let us know what you think at indianaweekend@gmail.com. Now here's John Strauss.
You may have seen in the news some of the coverage about plans to improve Indiana roads. A study paid for by the General Assembly says because of more fuel-efficient cars and people driving less, the amount raised by gasoline taxes is expected to fall in coming years. The money from gasoline excise taxes pays for road improvements, and one report after another, it's clear the state isn't spending enough on its highways. The governor has offered a $1 billion highway improvement plan. Democrats in the Indiana House of Representatives want to spend twice that much. We talked to Ball State economist Mike Hicks recently about gas taxes.
So we use gasoline taxes in a system that state collects gasoline tax, the federal government collects gasoline tax, and it's an excise tax. It's been rarely raised over the past 50 years. It's not a popular tax. And that's used to pay for road paving and infrastructure improvement. So the value of that tax has eroded profoundly because fuel efficiency has taken over so much of what we do. I have a relatively fuel inefficient pickup truck that's twice as efficient as my first car 30 years ago. And so the gas tax now is not meeting the needs of transportation infrastructure. So we either supplement the gas tax federally or at the state level, doesn't matter to most folks which is which, we don't see it when we go to the pump, or we implement some alternative tax. And the alternative tax might be a mileage tax, and a mileage tax, that way we're collecting tax on electric car users as well. I favor broadly increasing user fees on roads and not just targeting one type. We don't want to just target the electric car users. We don't want to just target the gasoline users. They both impose some costs on transportation. But we could fix this other ways as well. We could say, well, the transportation network is very important to commerce. And so what we're going to do is reduce the overall sales tax in Indiana from 7 cents to 5 cents, but we're going to expand the taxation to include all the services in Indiana that aren't taxed, right? So here ironically, we're the biggest manufacturer manufacturing state in the country, and we're taxing the purchase of the goods that we make at 7%, but we're not taxing legal services, and we're not taxing the foot massage or the accountancy. That doesn't make any sense. So we could pay for roads and pay for infrastructure improvements by broadening the tax base. And so you'll hear all economists, regardless of their political stripe, argue for broaden the tax base, tax more activities at a lower rate. That tends to distort less the behavior of households and businesses, and we'll gather the revenue that we need. But we are going to need more revenue ultimately for transportation infrastructure, if not now, in the next decade or so.
It seems like we're reminded every month, you know, bridge washing out on I-65 that can't be fixed for a week.
Right, it is. The road conditions here and much of the Midwest are horrible. I don't think it's so much a public safety issue right now as a nuisance issue. We're no different really than Ohio or Illinois right now. But, you know, we live in Muncie, and there's spring because the snow melts and the hubcaps spring up on both sides of the road. They precede flowers by about a week or two.
Indiana, with respect to lower taxes and business climate, we're a low-cost place to do business, but with consequently lower amenities as well. Do you see it that way?
But if you look at the long fiscal history of Indiana, what you'll see is that we didn't do a lot of the urban and transportation infrastructure or schools investment for a very long time. And so when we bought things, we tended to buy things that weren't really investment. What I mean by that is we bought short-term services instead of ensuring that we had the physical infrastructure, the roadways, the bridge networks, and all those sorts of things that would have been more important to us now. And then what we did to attract businesses, we gave them a deep discount. We treated Hoosier communities like commodities. So we're just going to compete on price. And so in that respect, that commoditization of Hoosier workers, which has really been the hallmark of local economic development for a long time, has been profoundly unhelpful. And all we have to do is look around at the economic outcomes and say this didn't do what we hoped it would be or we thought it would be, while communities that spent time on the investments did a pretty good job with it. And I think what we've done over the past decade or so is reduced our tax burden in Indiana to a level that we really don't have any need to be incentivizing additional businesses to come here. That's really the optimal condition to say, look, this is a good place to do business. We have a strong workforce. Our schools rank, best I can tell, somewhere about half, middle of the pack. Not where we'd like to be, but certainly not a place that would push people away. And with that, the call for incentivizing businesses to come here has largely gone away. And so what we ought to be doing now is telling businesses, look, we have the labor force, we have the good business climate, you can come here or not come here. We're going to be a great place to do business if you come, we're going to be a great place to do business if you don't come. And then make that argument to households who will be bringing the jobs ultimately with them. And that sounds sort of superficial, but that's really how the economy works. I mean, there's no reason for Silicon Valley other than the people that live there. There's no reason for Connecticut's employment other than the people that live there. There 50 years ago, you might argue that we had to have economic activity in the Great Lakes because that's where steel was made, right? And that's where the foundries were. Those days are largely gone now. The only real growth is happening in people-centered places. And you know this by noting, you know, we know what Detroit did 50 years ago. Detroit's a car town and Gary's a steel town. Well, if you go around to America and you ask today, what are the fast-growing places and what do they do? You know, you think Atlanta. What's Atlanta? What's Atlanta do? It's a people town. Austin, Texas. What's Austin do? It's a people town. You know, what does Phoenix do? It's a people town. And so today in America, and this is true in much of the world, the places that are growing, the places that are bubbling to the top, the places are seeing that economic growth of excess or population growth in excess of 1% a year, which are the successful places, those are people places.
Ball State economics professor Michael Hicks, director of the Center for Business and Economic Research. Just ahead, Hicks on good schools, mobile people, and economic growth.
Nobody gonna be my car. This is Indiana Weekend with John Strauss on Indiana Public Radio.
We don't do a lot of shows on public policy here, but with the elections coming up next year, we thought it might be interesting to talk just a bit about some of the choices we, the voters, face. Along those lines, it's interesting to hear from Ball State economist Michael Hicks about economic development and strong local communities, starting with Yorktown in Delaware County.
But I would think also about Yorktown. You know, it's a profound dichotomy that you cross the border from Muncie to Yorktown. And I know this till I lived here. I didn't even really know that I was in Yorktown. You know, I kind of picked a community where I thought the taxes were better. But the per capita income in Yorktown is twice what it is in Muncie. And it's still got, a significant amount of economic activity in Yorktown is in manufacturing. But because the schools have been very good, they're attracting a lot of households who value that, right? And so, and can be mobile. I mean, I think most households value schools, right? I really think that's the case. The problem is many households aren't mobile, so they can't leave the community that they're in, and so they don't put pressure on the schools to improve. If you're in a mobile community, you have to have good schools to take advantage of that. And so if you're outside a place like Muncie that has a very mobile population of professors and medical staff and all the associated staff and faculty here, that's a place that has to have a good schools. If you are in a place that's not dynamic in the sense of big population change and you're trying to improve your schools, you're just trying to get yourself on the map. And I would point this out. What if, as an economist, I'm all wrong? Everything I've said is wrong, and that really there's some other magical mystery juice that's causing economic activity here. And then the community goes back and says, well, we're gonna really make sure our schools are doing well. We're gonna commit a lot of time and effort to it. We're gonna find volunteers to help the Read by Three program that's taking off in Lafayette. And what if we make sure that the streets are paved? And what if we really try to get some private dollars into early childhood education? What if we enforce all those city codes that make sure residential communities are safe and clean, that they boost the values? What if we do all of that? Well, then, and Hicks is wrong, that economic activity doesn't flow there, and all those 500 studies that economists have published over the past 20 years are all wrong. What do you end up with? You end up with a better town, with better schools, with cleaner streets, with better neighborhoods, and you're no worse off than you would have been if you tried to chase a factory that is very unlikely to come to you. I always like to point out, last year there were about 115 new factory locations in the United States of over 500 employees. There are 3,144 counties in the United States. So you're going to get that new factory every 30 years. You're going to get a new factory. So your local economic developers are trying to get that factory. If it's just a random chance, or if we all queue up based on the reverse alphabetized list of American counties, you're going to get a new factory every 30 years. And so that's not the route to prosperity. It's getting the households to your community that matters.
And Hicks is not a fan of big incentives to attract new business.
I think the use of tax incentives is an area that we have been overindulgent in to a great degree. And I would argue that communities, and by the way, I'm not the only one doing this. The Pew Center for the States is conducting a multi-state study, of which Indiana is part of them. As we have looked at tax incentives and we have looked at the research and conducted some of our own, I think we have some very clear findings. The average cost per job of a business personal property tax abatement in Indiana is about $30,000 a job. And I think that's a lot to be paying for a job. We have found that EDGE credits, which are training credits that the state offers, are much more reasonable in the $2,000 to $4,000 per job. And that the other types of infrastructure incentives financed through TIF and generally aren't yielding benefits in terms of new jobs and greater tax base. And so the caution of that is that there are clearly in these type of analysis, some good abatements and some bad abatements and some good TIFs and some bad TIFs. So the challenge isn't necessarily to do away with them in their entirety, but to find some way to identify the bad ones up front. And I think the ways to do that are first for the legislature to look at the issue a bit, right? And then for local governments to look at the issue a bit. Instead of starting with almost every, as we examine TIFs and tax abatements in Indiana, almost all of them start off with the max. That's what we gave, the max abatement to every new business that seems to have come. That seems to be the default negotiating score in Indiana. When our state paid for a study, part of the Regional Cities Initiative, where they traveled around to other aspirational communities in the country, what they found was those places that gave tax abatements started at zero and worked their way to some negotiating point. I think we could reform abatements so that they were done at a regional level, right, so that we had more effective negotiators at the table. A Fortune 500 company is going to bring a very effective negotiator to a small town in Indiana to get abatements. And so maybe we're not equal partners in that discussion as often as we should be. I also think that we should have other local governments involved in the, particularly the abatement and the TIF issue. I mean, what happens is the county authorizes an abatement and a county or municipal government authorizes a TIF, and the tax dollars come mostly out of the school corporation. So school corporations probably ought to, on occasion, support a tax abatement or support TIF, depending on what's coming to town and what the expenditures are for, but they ought to have a say in it before they lose their tax dollars. And I think throughout Indiana, where we find school corporations which are no longer able to transport children to school, which is a property tax liability, that is coming only in places that have had very high abatements against them. So here in Muncie and in Fort Wayne and other places, I think there's a clear link between the loss of tax dollars through abatement. And that's not the only story, of course, but there's enough of it there to give us some pause as we think about how we're going to get kids to school in a half dozen communities around Indiana. Ventura Highway.
Professor Mike Hicks, director of the Center for Business and Economic Research at Ball State, talking about how tax incentives for economic development can hurt local schools, which, he would argue, is exactly what you don't want to do, since good schools are what help lure people and jobs to fast-growing communities. And that's our show for today. I'm John Strauss. Big thanks to our producer, Sean Ashcraft. Glad you could join us this time and hope you'll stay in touch. Drop me a note at indianaweekend@gmail.com if you would like more information or have a suggestion. In the meantime, thanks and have a great week. Until we meet again on the next Indiana Weekend on Indiana Public Radio.
Indiana Weekend with host John Strauss. Our show is engineered at Indiana Public Radio, produced by Sean Ashcraft. Major support for Indiana Weekend comes from IPR's listeners. We hope you'll join your friends who are IPR members. You can go to indianapublicradio.org or give us a call at 1-800-646-1812. Join us again next week for Indiana Weekend with John Strauss here on Indiana Public Radio.